You're listening to Gillespie Excellence in Internet Radio, only on FTRradio.com.
And welcome to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. It is a wonderful Tuesday night in excellence here in Internet Radio. With me, as usual, the lovely Smoozy Q.
Oh, Smoozy Q. Oh, Smoozy Q. Oh, Smoozy Q. Baby, I love you. Smoozy Q.
Hello.
How you doing, Smoozy?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, I'm doing just dandy.
Good.
It's we took last week off.
I missed you.
I missed you too. That's nice. I think you're lying to me, but that's okay. That's okay.
Why would I lie to you?
No. Well, because that's how we do on this show.
Oh.
You know, when Mark Warner calls in and when we say we've missed him, we don't mean it. I can say that because he's not here. But again, as usual, we give our props to Mark because he does a lot behind the scenes, and he's busy working campaigns.
He is a busy fella.
He is absolutely a busy fella. But we give him again props for putting together tonight's show, even when it sort of fell apart on us again at the last minute. But that's okay. Because during election season, these things happen. You have to kind of go with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some great guests for everyone tonight. We have on local political pundit. He also talks about national stuff. So guys, just because I say local doesn't mean you have to turn off the station. No. You stick right here.
Mm-hmm.
You stick around for the genius that is Abdul Hakim Shabazz.
Yep.
And then we also talk with Stephanie Fontenot from Americans for Prosperity.
Yep.
Oh, gosh. Well, since we've taken a week off, how you been, Smoozy?
I've been great. How have you been, Mr. Busy?
What do you mean? What do you why you got to put it like that?
Well,
why?
You had some big news that you announced last week.
Oh, yes. For those who may have missed the Twitter announcement and the endless Facebook announcements, because you put it up there once, you try to be clever. And then apparently you're a little too clever, so you have to keep on saying it over and over again for people to actually kind of to gather what's going on. Well, all that is to say is that Silk, a.k.a. me, Mrs. Silk and I are having a fourth child.
Yay!
That's right.
A baby Silk.
Four mini Silks. We'll be running around this earth here sometime April of next year. Anyway, okay. Well, I've made my announcement. You don't have any announcements, do you, Smoozy?
I have no announcements.
Well, okay. Well, you know what? We've talked about me and my progeny enough here. We need to cleanse the palate. So we're gonna take a quick break. And coming right back, we're going to have Smoozy will be back with us, and we'll be talking with Abdul Hakim Shabazz, curator of IndiePolitics.org. So stick around. We'll be right back after this. Something moving, feeling new. It is real quiet, muddy water.
FTR Radio. Kick it! Is from The Right Radio, online at FTRradio.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I am pleased to have with Smoozy and me this segment a friend of the show. He's one of our favorite locals on the pundit circuit here in Indiana, but he's got some knowledge on the national level. So, ladies and gentlemen, I welcome back Abdul Hakim Shabazz. How you doing, Abdul?
Doing well, and it's always a pleasure to be here with you and Smoozy. I'm going to apologize right now if you guys hear some bells in the background, because even political pundits have to go to Target and buy dinner.
That's right.
Completely understandable.
Yeah, I don't think I can actually count how many interviews we've had where someone has been in the car. You've heard the jingling of the keychain. We get it from Mark all the time. We just consider that because he's lazy. Or that he's living out of his car. One of the two. It could actually be both.
Yeah, he's probably living out of the back seat of his car. But at least somebody finally got there, so he can't complain.
Oh! See, you would be so welcomed here at the FTR Radio. You'd make quick friends with Thomas LeDuc, that's for sure.
We do what we can.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, Abdul, obviously, for those who may not know, but I know that you're definitely in the know, there was a poll that came out last week. I'm getting ahead of myself. What I want to talk to you first is that the head of the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke, was in Indianapolis on Monday, and you happened to attend. First of all, what were your impressions of the Fed chairman's speech?
Very professorial, I thought, which is part of his background during this time. That I was sort of doing the Ivy League circuit. Really sharp guy, and he made some interesting points. And I almost thought, and this entire speech is posted on my website, indiepolitics.org. Shameless self promotion.
I hope you shamelessly promote yourself this entire interview.
We do try. That you can hear. What I thought was interesting is how we sort of played offense and defense, defending the Fed's decisions to keep interest rates low, and actually for printing more money via quantitative easement, you know, saying this doesn't add to, you know, inflation because we don't necessarily circulate that money in the economy. We use it as reserves, you know, for the bank system. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was, you know, sort of an interesting approach. And also, for everyone who's calling for more oversight, you know, of the Fed, like, they'll be careful so it doesn't become politicized.
Well, I think those who want to, who want more, you know, oversight of the Fed, I think actually their end goal is to just completely abolish it in general. That's kind of a Ron Paul libertarian thing, but I know that there's actually seems to be some gaining support for that.
But see, but the problem with that logic is there's no Western nation that cannot survive without a centralized bank. You need one.
Well, we did for almost 120 years, Abdul.
Well, yeah, and you saw what our life was like. But we're also a much more complicated society than we were before.
Well, it's true.
I mean, you didn't hear about, you know, derivatives back here in 1812.
No, but I mean, you know, again, I'm not advocating one way or the other, but I'm just saying, you know, we had the Industrial Revolution and a lot of technological development prior to, well, and I should say a lot of economic growth here in the United States prior to a Federal Reserve.
But as I just could say, we also used to have, you know, slavery. I mean, we don't have that anymore, but...
Yes. Yeah, you know what? You hit the nail on the head because, honestly, we don't have any economic growth here in this country or technological advancements.
Well, Mr. Renekton made an interesting point. He said we do have growth. The problem is, I thought this was an interesting point that he made. Mm-hmm. He says we do have growth, but our problem is our growth is not fast enough to reabsorb the people who've lost their jobs.
Yeah.
We're taking care of people who are going into the workforce, but he's worried about that perpetual, you know, 8% unemployment, and then as these people, you know, 40% of them have been out of work for more than 6 months, the more they're out of work, you know, the harder it is for them to get back in the game, and then we all sort of end up with a sort of a permanent underemployed or unemployed class, mm-hmm. which means, you know, more government assistance, you know, more government handouts.
Well, I was reading on the Indianapolis Business Journal's recap of Chairman Bernanke's speech, and they brought that up. But one thing that I thought was kind of interesting, and I'd like your take on this, is that whenever seemingly as they've been doing, you know, monthly job reports, and it seems as if the number of people actually looking for jobs is going up. I mean, excuse me, the number of people who are not looking for jobs is going up, and so that is actually not you. Those numbers aren't used when calculating unemployment. So whereas the unemployment rate seems to be going down ever so slightly, it seems as if the number is actually being undercounted. Now, how does that factor in, if at all, with what Chairman Bernanke is saying in terms of jobs.
Well, the thing that's always been with our unemployment, and it's really, really important to keep this in mind, is when we look at sort of our unemployment rate, you know, who's out of work, who isn't out of work, you know, there's that question of, you know, those people who sort of, quote-unquote, dropped off the grid, mm-hmm. you know, so to speak, you know, where do they go and what is our true, what is our real, you know, unemployment, underemployment rate? And, you know, I think the bigger thing is, you know, part of it is uncertainty. You know, nobody wants to move until we know exactly what's going to happen. And unfortunately, we won't know that until after Election Day.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly.
One of the things I thought was interesting about his comments, too, and you know, maybe I just haven't noticed it before. I will confess that I don't follow every word that comes out of Bernanke's mouth. But I just found it interesting the focus that he had on employment and unemployment, you know, in terms of Fed policy. Because when you think about it in terms of, you know, they're setting monetary policy, the amount of focus given to the unemployment rate, it seemed, I don't know, it seemed interesting to me for someone who's saying, you know, he doesn't want it to be a politicized sort of thing, that he seemed to be kind of, as you were observing, playing defense and maybe kind of helping defend the current administration with his words.
I think they weren't so much defending the current administration as they were defending their actions in particular.
Right.
Because, you know, when you look at the history of Fed chairman, you know, some very closely aligned with, you know, an administration, some, we're going to do what we want to do, and that's the end of the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they were more about defending themselves as opposed to the, you know, current and last administration's policies. Because remember, he was appointed under George W. Bush.
Right.
I was going to say, yeah, he was a Bush appointee, and then... was it Alan Greenspan who was
Greenspan. Here's the scary thing, let you guys know how much of a dork I am. I can name the last three Fed chairmen.
Well, because Greenspan was there for an eternity, wasn't he?
Then it was Volcker, right?
Paul Volcker.
Ah, the Volcker Commission. That's right. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Like I said, if I can name all three, the last three Fed chairmen, you know you've, you know, seeped in the inner dorkdom.
I appreciate that dorkdom, Abdul.
I think we all do, especially as listeners. Well, Abdul, we're going to switch gears on you here a bit.
No problem. I'm just in, like I said, Target buying dinner and looking for a phone charger.
Well,
so
you're exposing the world to your genius on a greater level, I guess, as you go down the aisle looking for bread, which kind of, you know, do you want whole?
More like steak and blue cheese, but
and promoting capitalism.
That's right. That's the one thing we could expect from Abdul. He is one of the biggest capitalists you'll ever come across.
A socially progressive capitalist pig is how I label myself.
Well, Abdul, kind of what I was talking about when we first started off, but I kind of want to focus on elections here on out. Because you, again, on indypolitics.org, you're always providing the most up-to-date political analysis, especially when it comes to elections here in Indiana. And the two biggest races that are going on are the race for governor and the race to replace Richard Lugar. And as I started to say at the top of the show, or the top of the segment, I should say, a poll came out last week, the latest Howie DePauw poll, independent poll, getting the numbers on the latest Senate race and the gubernatorial race. And we'll start off with the gubernatorial race just because, well, as you said earlier, what gubernatorial race? Because
sure.
Essentially, Mike Pence is leading John Gregg by about 13 points.
Right. Mike Pence, this entire race, when the last Howie poll came out, had a double-digit lead. It was a little bit bigger, 16 points. Now it's, you know, down to 13. So maybe John Gregg's got a chance if, you know, this race is in, you know, June of next year, and he'll eventually, you know, close that gap. But it does show that, you know, John Gregg has got some issues, and his campaign has just never caught fire, you know, never caught traction. You know, there's a school of thought that says his better chance to run would have been back in 2008 against Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels, when the Obama people, you know, just had the ground game and mm-hmm. were all over the place. You know,
you could make that argument, but Jill Long Thompson could have used the same people, and even if she did, she still ended up losing by almost 20 points. I mean, Mitch, regardless of the national wave behind Obama, Mitch had the state locked up in 2008.
Oh, yeah. And they also started early.
Oh, yeah, they did.
To find themselves, and Joel Thompson did have a very divisive primary.
Yes, yes. And Mike Pence was spared that. And to a certain degree, so is John Gregg. But I guess when you look at especially the polling numbers, it seems that John Gregg's polling numbers have only gone up because his name ID has gone up, which, again, as you said, if the general election was held in June of next year, it might actually be a race. But considering we only have 35 days left, you know, his tick from 31% to 34% isn't really going to be, I wouldn't call that a momentum going for him. But without having that primary, he had no name ID. And because and the last time he was an elected official was 10 years ago, and no one remembers him. He was Speaker of the House. I mean,
well, actually, here's a little bit of insight. And I also write a political gossip column called The Cheat Sheet. And one of the interesting things we found out today, which will be in The Cheat Sheet on Friday, which, by the way, $25 gets you 6 months subscription. So everybody, you know, support my bad cigar and martini habits if you could.
it's worth it, people. It is.
What's interesting that is that John Gregg's name ID, he was running with several other candidates, never really got past like 25%. Mm-hmm. And he was like the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was the Democrats did some early polling, and John Gregg and some other people, and he won at literally 25%, you know, of the collective vote. So name ID has always been a problem for John Gregg. I mean, we know him, you know, in the political class.
Yeah.
But outside of that, you know, nobody else does.
Yeah. No, I mean, and honestly, okay, I know Susie, yeah, you know, Susie, you're in Missouri, so you don't get to see all of our fantastic John Gregg commercials. Actually, not that the majority of Hoosier citizens actually get to see John Gregg commercials.
I was going to say, I got to see the latest one.
Yes, well, the one thing that I haven't shown you, and Abdul, maybe you can comment on this, but is he running for governor of Indiana or mayor of Sanborn?
I think he's running for the head of the Sanborn Chamber of Commerce. I don't think even the mayor of Sanborn would run ads that are, you know, that hokey. I mean, I understand, you know, John Gregg is from a small town. I am not from a small town, so I understand there are certain small town dynamics, you know, that go into that. But I think to a certain degree, the ads are starting to backfire because it almost sort of, you know, it feeds into a stereotype, which is something that, you know, nobody wants.
Well, you know, I want to ask you about that kind of stereotype because it seems as if John Gregg, well, first of all, Mitch Daniels in his especially in his reelection for governor, he focused on all that he was able to do, how he was able to raise Indiana to the next level. He made Indiana this place where you wanted to be, this grandiose place with, you know, with jobs, with low taxes, with a balanced budget. And granted, these were things that he was able to accomplish as governor, but he made Indiana almost bigger than itself. The thing that I see with John Gregg's ads is that basically he's whittling Indiana down to this town that's probably no bigger than Fisher.
300 people?
Well, exactly. No, I was going to say circa Fisher's via 1980, but, you know.
Here's what I think John Gregg should have done with his commercials, and I'll be happy to get you guys' feedback. What John Gregg should have done is instead of him saying, you know, I'm from Sanborn, let the people of Sanborn tell your story, but use, you know, very global, universal things of jobs, you know, of education, you know, economic development, let them tell that story, not you, and say, no, John will do that for us in Sanborn, just imagine what he'll do for Indiana.
But he used the entire population of Sanborn in his latest ad.
Well, matter of fact, I think everybody in that town, except for the black guys, you know, from
yes.
Sanborn.
Yes, in fact,
but
that was...
I think he might be from Terre Haute and just drove over.
Actually, well, there was a good auction going on.
Okay, and the other thing about that ad, was the audio of the auctioneer louder than John Gregg was? Real quick... I'm going to play for our audience the audio of John Gregg, the Democratic candidate for governor here in Indiana. Here's the audio of his latest ad.
I'm John Gregg, the guy with two first names running for governor. And the only fast talker we have in Sanborn is Jay Yeagle, the auctioneer. But even Jay couldn't sell what they're selling in Washington. That millionaires should get tax cuts that are 100 times larger than for the rest of us? Congressman Mike Pence, God love him, he voted for all of it. And even wants more tax cuts for millionaires. I just disagree. And I hope no amount of fast talk will change your mind either.
Okay, we just played that. Yeah, the audio now, of the auctioneer was louder.
And see, and here's something else, and you may have to go back and play it again and listen to it. At the end of the ad, the auctioneer says, sold for like $174,000. Mike Pence's congressional pay.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Clever.
And you know what? Probably won't anybody else unless you know exactly what that means.
I will say that is clever.
That
is obscure.
Yeah, very obscure.
It's extremely clever if you know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
So there's like 10 people who are going to get the joke.
Right, exactly. And that's why, you know, when we look at things, you know, like Saturday Night Live and, you know, other types of shows, you know, the bit only works if everybody gets the joke.
Exactly. Well,
and unless everybody knows what a congressman's salary is, it doesn't work.
Exactly, exactly. Well, let's switch gears here a bit, because basically we've established that Mike Pence is probably going to win this race.
Now, granted, I just want to, you know, caution people. You know, there's still lots of things that can happen between now and Election Day. I mean, I jokingly say, you know, live boy, you know, dead girl, you know, can easily change the dynamics, you know, of the governor's race. You know, major screw up in the debate, you know, natural disaster. You know, anything can happen.
Anything.
And I will give the Pence people credit for not resting on their laurels.
Oh my goodness, no, they do not. You know, our good friend Mark Warner, who sure we razz quite a bit on this show, but he's doing is volunteering on the Pence campaign, and his evenings are booked and his weekends are booked. I mean, he is so involved in this campaign, and what he tells us is that they are going full bore. They are not taking anything for granted, and this election is not over until November 7th. I mean, they'll go right through November 6th if they have to. You know,
you take nothing for granted, and you run like you're behind.
Exactly.
Right. I'm pretty sure Mark's
side, you probably are.
I'm pretty sure Mark's G-chat status is something about not sleeping until November 7th. So
yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Well, again, switching gears here, we're gonna move up to the Senate race, which is actually a race between Joe Donnelly and Richard Murdoch. And the one thing that I've noticed about the Howie poll numbers is that basically nothing has changed. For all the rhetoric and the hyperbole and the name calling that Joe Donnelly is throwing at Richard Murdoch, and for, well, I'm for all the campaigning that Richard Murdoch is doing, the needle's not moving.
No, the needle, and see, here's the thing: the needle isn't moving for either candidate. No, they're both pretty much in the exact same place where they were several weeks ago, and all their internal show. You know, one day, you know, maybe Donnelly up maybe by two. One day, maybe Murdoch up by two. This race has been a statistical tie, and the challenge is going to be, and the strongest argument, well, actually, here's the irony of irony. I mean, everybody in the political class agrees that this is all about the Lugar Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody pretty much agrees that that is what the issue is. You know, they're the ones, who, that's why Mitt Romney and Mike Pence are both polling in the 50s, and you know, Mike Pence and Richard Murdoch and Joe Donnelly are statistically tied, because those Lugar Republicans are not sold.
Well,
and what's ironic is I've spoken to several people who are big Lugar fans and are still kind of annoyed, saying the only reason that they will vote for Richard Murdoch is because they don't want Harry Reid to be majority leader. And this is what I think is the irony of irony, that as much as they got beat up on, those Lugar Republicans, quote-unquote rhinos, are going to be the ones who save the day. Because if they stay home, Murdoch loses.
No, that's exactly right. Well, what's interesting is that, as you note on IndyPolitics.org, in your write-up of the latest poll, you say that Murdoch wins 60% of Lugar supporters compared to Romney's 82%.
Exactly. And that is the drop-off. You know, those are the people who are not sold, you know, on Richard Murdoch's campaign. Now, I don't think it's Rich personally, because known Rich for years, so I think he's a really good guy, you know, really nice guy. I wish he would have, you know, toned down, you know, some of that rhetoric early on. But where they made a big mistake was they automatically assumed, you know, that the Luger people would just fall in line. Like, mm-hmm. no. Like, you know, like anybody, ask anybody who's married, you know, you make your wife mad, you got to spend a little bit of time, you know, trying to fix all that.
Susie, is that right?
Well, I would say, generally speaking, that's a very good course to follow.
That's a very good course to follow.
And the Murdoch people never did that. They kind of believed their own press. You know, they listened to the Greg Fenix and Monica Boyers of this world. For those people who don't know who they are, lucky you. I mean, they just basically, you know, ran around talking all this silly nonsense, and now, you know, they're in the fight of their lives. And I think, and this is going to sound really weird, I think the super PACs are actually, you know, to be honest with you, kind of wasting their money trying to drive up Donald's negatives when they ought to be, you know, appealing to those Luger Republicans, saying, you know, baby, please come home. You know, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again.
But
a little serenading might help.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, essentially what you got to focus on, though, is, I mean, you have Donnelly in his latest ad. He's walking down the middle of the road. How cute is that? You know, basically saying he's a middle-of-the-road Democrat when his record shows otherwise. He's voted 88% with Nancy Pelosi, 80% with President Obama, including all of his big-ticket items. And it seems as if, I mean, where Hoosiers, for the most part, as we can tell, at least in the Romney poll, the Romney-Obama poll, is that, yeah, they don't like what the president has done. They're not big fans of his record. But
the other part of that dynamic, too, old friend, is that Hoosiers traditionally, in presidential years, have been split-ticket voters.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 2008, 2004, 2000, you know, they have traditionally split their ticket. The question is, you know, will that trend, you know, continue? You know, how do people vote for Mitch Daniels and Evan Bayh, or George W. Bush and... You know, and Frank O'Bannon.
Well, I'd say the bigger question here, Mitch Daniels and Barack Obama.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, I mean, Mitch Daniels, I mean, in terms of the vote, vastly outweighed President Obama on election night in 2008. But the fact is that the two statewide, you know, top of the ticket voter or ballot holders, Mitch Daniels and Barack Obama, they won the state, two different parties.
Right.
And I've had this conversation with a number of conservatives here in Indiana, and they're baffled that this is still even a race. And I keep on, you know, you can point to 2008, but you can, you know, people can come back and say, oh, well, you know, Barack Obama, he was just kind of like this fresh, this point of fresh air. And you know, he was bringing the hope and change. We had a lot of the positive behind him. I think
they also had a field office in like every other town.
Well, yeah, I mean, they did. But I think the better election to look at is 2004, when you had Mitch Daniels at the top of the ticket. You had George W. Bush at the top of the ticket. We took back the state house. Republicans took the state house. Republicans took the state senate, which they pretty much always will have. They took 7 of 9 congressional seats, but they still lost to Evan Bayh.
And essentially, we're looking
at the same thing.
And I will argue, in part, that was because, you know, Evan Bayh extremely popular, and you had a candidate who sucked.
Well, yeah, Marvin Scott. I mean, yeah, okay. They always throw that back at me, but I'm like, still, the point is that you had a ticket that very much supported the election of Marvin Scott, regardless of what kind of candidate he was.
And see, what that tells me, my friend, is that what you will get is, you know, the Hoosiers will fundamentally vote, you know, likability matters. And mm-hmm. and I'm amazed at how many of my friends who've been in politics for years don't grasp the concept that voting is as much an emotional process as it is an intellectual process.
Mm-hmm.
Why does my wife like a purple iPod instead of a blue one? And even though they do the exact same thing, because purple is her favorite color, and that's what she wanted.
But I guess, so here's the question that I have for you as we kind of wind down talking about this particular race, because I still want to get your thoughts on the presidential race, because we're going to keep you on here as long as we can.
If my phone beeps or something, I'm just basically taking off the car charger and into the house charger.
Okay,
so
okay.
We can regroup in like 2 seconds.
Okay. But you talk about likability, and so I get the likability with Evan Bayh. He's a known commodity. He was a popular governor, you know. But Joe Donnelly, he's not necessarily likable It's just that he's not, as my Democrat colleague likes to refer to him, he's not Captain Cranky Pants.
And your Democrat colleague, your friend is right. I mean, he doesn't come across as angry, bitter, and he also didn't have, a divisive primary, attached with him.
So to that certain degree, he's still a bit of an unknown. So do you go with the unknown possible likability? Although, as one of a Democrat that I follow from Bloomington, Indiana, he shortly after Joe Donnelly won the quote unquote primary, he basically said that Joe Donnelly. He said that Brad Ellsworth has more charisma, or more of a personality than Joe Donnelly.
I think he does. One thing to keep in mind, though, and I will kind of maintain this. In any other year, Brad Ellsworth would have probably been a better pick than 2010 because, people were just fighting a tidal wave and they weren't going to win, sort of regardless.
Yeah.
You can tell I'm in the house because the dog has started barking.
That's okay. Again, that's what happens when you get people to call in. So, the final topic of the night, I mean, we're addressing all of the races. On Wednesday night is the first presidential debate. They're going to be focusing pretty much as long as Jim Lehrer can hold ground. And there's one thing I know about Jim Lehrer is that he won't deviate too far from what is set before him. The first debate is supposed to be on domestic policy. How do you see that playing out?
Well, here's the thing. The candidates are going to know the classic line is going to be, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Obviously that answer is technically yes when you look at what, this economy was doing back then. The question is, will we be better off 4 years from now? And I think if you're the Romney people, that's how you try to frame, the debate, the discussion, which is, we admit it, we have the worst economy since the Great Depression, but we should be doing better. And here's how, I want to take the country, to have us, do a better job. I think it's pretty damning, the videotape of him at the 47% mark, say with it what you will, there's no way to make that a nicer piece.
Yeah.
So, that's just the way it is. And I wrote a piece for the Indianapolis Star a couple of weeks ago, and what I argued was that if you're Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, the person you want to win is my wife, the truly independent voter. I voted for Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians. She votes for people. She has her issues that are important to her. For example, she is personally pro-life, but I pity the man who tries to tell her what to do with her woman parts, because she'll find out she was a sharpshooter in the military.
Oh. Well, yeah. do not mess with the lovely Mrs. Shabazz.
Exactly. I didn't find that out until after we got married.
I was just saying, no wonder you're always calling her the lovely Mrs. Shabazz. not the fact that she's not. It's just that if you don't,
Exactly. And I think it's also interesting, Josh, how both sides have been sort of playing down their expectations. Well, the president's a great debater. Well, Mitt Romney went through all those Republican things. So, everybody's trying to lower the expectations. So if they don't do well, they have sort of a reason or an excuse for it.
Well, I know the Obama campaign is pretty much, you hear their people talk, they've basically said, the first debate will obviously go to Mitt Romney.
Yeah. I mean, I do think, though, in all the seriousness, the pressure really is on Mitt Romney because they have not had the best couple of weeks. We've seen some of the national polls tighten, but still the president has momentum going into swing states like Ohio and Virginia and Florida. And so the challenge for the Romney people is going to be to really hit it out of the ballpark. And I will maintain, and you and I have had this discussion before because you're much more ideologically conservative than I am, is
I don't hold that against you.
Oh. Or you either, so that's why we get along.
That's right.
So the problem is that Mitt Romney has not been the real Mitt Romney. And this kind of goes to what we sort of talked about before we were on the air, which is those Republican primaries, and even Democratic primaries to a certain degree, people have to run so far to the left and so far to the right that when you try to get back in the middle, it is the trickiest balancing act. It's like, you know, Cirque du Soleil. I mean, how do you balance all this stuff and still be true to those conservatives or liberals that voted for you, you know, versus, you know, the 10%, the 10 to 20% of the population is really going to decide this thing. And so for Mitt Romney and Barack Obama, they're going to be talking to the undecided voter. That's the person and the individual that they will be speaking with at Wednesday night's debate. The people who haven't made up their minds and are on the fence, because their people are going to come out, because there's no reason for them not to.
Sure.
So the question is, you know, how do I get those undecided voters, you know, to pull the lever for me? Or at the very least, if they're not going to vote for me, don't come out and vote for the other guy.
Yeah. Well, this is... go ahead, Susie. Oh.
I was going to say, they just have to be sure that in talking to those undecided voters, they don't openly admit that they're talking specifically to those undecided voters and acknowledge that that's what they're really trying to do.
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, everybody knows it, so just come out and say it. I mean, if I'm Mitt Romney, say, hey, you know what? If you're on the fence in this election, not quite sure who to vote for, here's why I think you should vote for me.
But didn't he do that basically with the 47% comment?
That's what I was worried about.
Well, the thing is, but those people are undecided. What he was arguing was before, those people would never vote for him regardless. But let's say you're part of that, you know, 5-6% that isn't really quite sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, look at my record. Like, you may not like me, and that's fine, because no one likes anybody 100%. You know, talk to my wife, ha, 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 ha. But what I will do is I will get up every morning and ask myself, how can I make the lives of the American people better? How can we have an environment where we create more jobs, we have economic security, and we have financial security? And, you know, and national security. You know, that's what I want to do. And like I said, you know, because there are a lot of people in your life that may not like them per se, but you know they do a good job. And you may not like them, but I promise you I'll do the best job possible to make, you know, this is, you know, the greatest country on the face of the earth, and, you know, Providence and the shining city on a hill, and throw whatever metaphor of your choice.
Reagan-approved metaphor of your choice.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, Abdul, I think that's probably some good advice to take into these next three debates.
Why am I not a paid political consultant, my friend? I have no idea.
I don't know either.
It's a crying shame.
It is. Real quick, what do you think, in just a few words, what do you think Mitt Romney has to do to win Wednesday night?
Basically, fix every stupid mistake he's ever made and say, you know what, this campaign, yes, I have made mistakes, but you know what? I'm human. We all are. And, you know, as your president, you know, I'll probably make a mistake or two. I freely admit that. But at the end of the day, everything I do, I'm doing it in the best interest of the American people. This country has blessed me, you know, with opportunities that a lot of people haven't had the chance to have or maybe been thrown a curveball. I want you to have the same, you know, chances and opportunities that I did.
Ladies and gentlemen,
don't run from your wealth. You know, use it as a strength.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, that has been Abdul Hakim Shabazz. Abdul, where can they find you on the internet?
You can find most of our work at the political website, ndpolitics.org. We put up lots of stories, and we also try to put up audio from newsmakers like Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, so you can hear everyone in their entirety, as opposed to snippets and sound bites, and that way no one is taken out of context. You can also follow us on Twitter, ndpoliticsorg.
Well, so you know, as basically Abdul has talked about, Indie Politics isn't just about indie politics.
Nope, just about. It's all over this great state of Indiana.
That's right. Abdul, thanks for being on the show tonight.
Hey, it was my pleasure, my friend.
You're welcome. Hey, coming up next, Stephanie Fontenot from the Americans for Prosperity. She's going to talk to us about the bus tour that's going on across the country that AFP is putting on. So stick around. We'll be back right after this.
6 out of 10 Republicans recommend FTR Radio to everyone they know. The other 4 are rhinos. FTR Radio. Online at FTRradio.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. With us this segment is a guest we had on last time. She was on the show. We were talking about Right Online. But we were talking with Stephanie Fontenot from Americans for Prosperity. And she's going to be talking to us about the Obama's Failing Agenda Tour. Stephanie, thanks for being on this week.
Sure. Thanks for having me on, Josh.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So first of all, tell us a little bit about this tour. I mean, it seems like the name gives it away, but, you know, hey.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's just been this massive effort, which is, we've had a great, great response that we're just so thankful for. But, you know, we've got 3 buses, and, you know, basically what we're doing is we're trying to spread the message that, you know, what the president's current agenda is doing and what his current policies are in place. You know, they're doing so many, you know, they're not exactly helping our economy as it is. So, you know, we've just been going across the nation. We've got 3 buses going from, you know, the East Coast, the Middle, the West. And, you know, we're trying to share that message and to point out some things that, you know, maybe people wouldn't have thought about otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking at the map, which is located at AmericansForProsperity.org. That it looks. Did you guys get your start there in Ohio?
We actually kicked it off in Tampa.
Oh, really? Oh,
mm-hmm. We went all the way up to Tampa. We went from Tampa and we drove up to Charlotte. You know, the same weekend as the DNCs, and we kind of made that our big kickoff point and launched all 3 buses. You know, none of them were flown. They drove all those miles.
Wow. No. So you launched this at the GOP and the DNC conventions.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That is spectacular. I can only imagine what the reaction was at the DNC.
It was pretty cool.
The one thing I will say this: the one thing that I saw from a lot of tweets, and not just from conservative activists, but just from general people within the media, was that they said that compared to the GOP convention, there were a lot more Republicans or conservative activists who crashed the DNC convention than Democrats who crashed the GOP convention. So that's to know that you guys were there with this bus, which, you know, if people haven't seen the bus, could you describe the bus for us a bit? Because you got a wrap on this sucker.
Sure. Yeah, we sure do. And you can see we've got all these pictures posted on our Facebook, which is it's facebook.com/fightback. And we've got pictures, you know, we've got a green bus, a burgundy one, and then we've got a black one. And they're just, they're massive, massive tour buses, you know. Along the side, it has, you know, we've got 2 of his quotes, the infamous, you know, you didn't build that quote, mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. course. And then we have, you know, a bunch of bullet points that basically are, you know, just like the main things that, you know, the $16 trillion you know, debt that we're having to bear, and, you know, the green energy scams. I mean, just so many things that we could barely fit on the bus, but somehow we managed to get 4 or 5 on there. But trust me, it is pretty intense. We've had, you know, I just left North and South Dakota and Wyoming and Montana this past week. And, you know, the response we've gotten was incredible. I love people honking, you know, stopping the bus. But we actually had a car drive up to our bus and wave at them. And the next thing I know, I'm in the car following behind. I see 2 t-shirts being thrown out the bus driver's window. So we're getting great responses.
I should say so. Wow. So what made you decide to target certain states? Are you looking at states that are considered swing states, or maybe states that may have swing districts, or what is pushing the direction of the buses?
Sure. Well, you know, we have a few of our priority states, which, you know, of course, AFP isn't directly involved in elections or parties, mm-hmm. but, you know, we do have a lot of states that, you know, we're kind of pushing a lot of information towards. And, you know, we're of course hitting them, but, you know, honestly, we've hit almost 400 cities and we've still got a ways to go. So we're reaching, you know, we made it to the very edges of South Dakota, and I just can't imagine. We're just hitting all kinds of cities, you know, regardless of whether they're, you know, 12 people for the rally, or if they're, you know, upwards of 200 people for the rally.
This is like a nationwide tour.
It is. It is. It's huge. And it's going on every day. I mean, you know, I was looking at our Facebook page earlier, which, you know, is kind of a fun part of my job, is to, you know, make sure that all the photos are going up and everything. So, you know, everybody's collecting the pictures and stuff. And I'm telling you, it gets a lot. I mean, you'll you'll check it 1 hour and you've got pictures up from, you know, Ohio, and then the next hour you've got, oh, there's some from Kansas. I mean, it's, you know, it's just nationwide.
That is amazing. So I'm looking at this, and what kind of takes place at these rallies? It seems like you have a number of speakers who are involved. What goes on at a typical rally?
Yeah, well, you know, they really kind of vary, you know, depending on the group that we're expecting, or, you know, maybe the crowd that we're, you know, hoping to get. Mm-hmm. You know, they vary from just about anything. You know, we've had a few that are, you know, rallies for economic freedom, and, you know, they'll have, you know, we've had Tucker Carlson come speak, the editor of the Daily Caller, and we've had, you know, Laura Ingraham come speak. And then we'll have, you know, some that are very, you know, heavily based on phone banking and, you know, kind of teaching activists, you know, hey, here's how you get the word out, you know, by going door to door and making these calls on the weekend. So, you know, it kind of depends. We've had a great variety of different, I guess, structures for the events, which kind of makes it fun, especially when you're doing several and, you know, many cities in the same region. But, you know, one thing that we are doing that's pretty cool is, you know, this Saturday, October 6th, we're going to be in Columbus, Ohio, and we're actually bringing all three buses are going to converge there, and we're having a big, we're calling it an economic freedom rally, and, you know, we're going to have Three Doors Down is going to be doing entertainment for it, and we've got Laura Ingraham. Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. Definitely.
Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, no, I was just going to say, if anybody who's listening is interested, and if you guys want to check it out, you can find it at failingagenda.com or on our AFP website, which is AmericansForProsperity.org.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. You just kind of answered my question. I was going to say that I gather the three buses are touring independently of each other, but then meeting up from time to time?
Mm-hmm. They are. They've got that one's going on, and then I know that we're planning two or three additional, you know, kind of meetings of all three of the buses, you know, because you've got one that's mainly been touring the West, one that's mainly been touring kind of the middle of the country, and then one that's been touring the East Coast. So we're trying to get, you know, really, I mean, we're expecting massive crowds to be, so it's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, we're working on two or three additional tours to the one that's this Saturday in Columbus, where we're going to have all three buses there. We'll have a great panel of speakers and, you know, hopefully some more entertainment. I think Three Doors Down is a great start. I love those guys.
They are an absolute great start. I loved seeing them at the convention. It was kind of a surprise.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's kind of cool when you think about that. I know that, you know, that was one of the things that Larry O'Connor with Breitbart talked about during one of his panels at Right Online, was the convergence of and the influence of, you know, Hollywood and culture on, you know, on politics. You don't really think about it, but, you know, people like that have a huge impact when they channel that towards, you know, towards doing, getting the right message out there. I mean, it can be pretty phenomenal.
Well, I think most of the time when we think of politically active, you know, artists or celebrities, we're thinking of, you know, the vitriol coming from Alec Baldwin or Roseanne Barr or, you know, those types.
Uh-huh.
Whereas, you know, you have guys like Three Doors Down who they may be political, you really don't know it, you know, and then and then they go and do things like, you know, they play at the GOP convention or tour with Americans for Prosperity. I mean, seriously, how cool is that?
Yeah.
Big props to those guys. So that's just I've really been excited to see what AFP has been doing, especially these last few months leading up to the general election, because, I mean, obviously we know how important this election is, regardless of party. And I know mm-hmm. that AFP tries to stay very because of your status, you have to be very non-party oriented. But has there been a lot of I guess I should say, what has been the reaction to these tours? Are you getting even a lot of independent response, people who may not necessarily be politically active or even politically motivated, you know, kind of checking out, seeing what's going on, hearing the message and being like, wow, this is a lot more important than I thought?
Yeah, you know, and I think, I know that when we take the bus around, I mean, it's such a big statement. And, you know, you can't exactly miss it when we're driving through, you know, towns or cities, no matter what the size is. And, you know, I think that draws a lot of interest. You know, we've got all of our social media stuff on there. We've got our website on there. And people take pictures and they check it out. So, you know, who knows what we're reaching there. And I think that, you know, especially with what we're doing on Saturday, you know, bringing in kind of, you know, a big entertainment factor along with, you know, some great speakers and, you know, really getting our message out there, I think that's going to reach a lot of people that we might not normally reach.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned before we came on air that you were going to mention some events that are happening here in Indiana.
Sure.
So what's coming up in Indiana?
Sure. Well, I was actually
put you on the spot there. Sorry.
Are you there?
Yes. Yes. Sorry. I was just saying. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put you on the spot there.
Oh no, that's okay. I'm ready. As soon as Mark had contacted me, I thought, oh great, I'll talk to our state director down in Indiana, and you know, sure enough, Chase Dunham came mm-hmm. through, and he was like, oh, I'd love to tell you about, you know, more details on what we've got. And you know, we're actually, our bus is going to be in Indiana on Thursday and Friday of this week.
Fantastic.
So perfect timing.
Absolutely. Well, I should give a shout out to our state director here in Indiana, Chase Downham. That also reminds me, because I've been a miserable failure at promoting these on my own show, even though they occur on my own website. This week, HoosierAccess.com is sponsoring our third Twitter chat. We use the hashtag HAChat, and our guest this week for our Twitter chat is Chase Downham, the state director for Americans for Prosperity, Indiana chapter. So I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about, especially about these upcoming events.
Definitely. That's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. These things have actually kind of taken off. Actually, I should take it back. This is our fourth one. Wow. I moderate these things. You think I would know what I would know? no, we've talked with Pete Seat, who is the communications director for the state party, but he also worked in the Bush White House. We've talked with a state rep candidate, and we talked with Chris Faulkner, who is a political consultant. I'm sorry, I'm taking away from your time, Stephanie, but
I
just found out today that our chat with the state rep candidate actually got mentioned in the Indianapolis Star, though they did not mention who held the chat. They just happened to mention a Twitter forum. Like, oh, thanks. Thanks for that. Anyway, but all that is to say, no, we're going to have on Chase this week. So another shout out to AFP.
Yeah.
Well, great. Yeah. Well, hey, he's a great guy, and he'll definitely have more to tell you guys about the our events in Indiana are going to be Thursday and Friday. So if he's on around then, I'm sure he'll have a lot more to update y'all on.
Absolutely. So check out our HA chat on Wednesday, 8:00. Chase Downham, Indiana AFP. Okay, so that was my shameless plug during the middle of your segment. So, okay, just real quick, what else have you got, guys? What other states are you guys hitting this week? And what can they do? Where can they go to find out more?
Sure. Well, you know, you can find out more. We're constantly updating from the road. We've got all kinds of, you know, folks tweeting and Facebooking, and it's, you know, you can pretty much get a live behind the scenes view. You can follow us on Twitter at AFPHQ. Mm-hmm. And then you can follow us on Facebook, which is www.facebook.com/fightback. And, you know, we're going to be in Ohio. We're going to be, I think we're in, man, I lose track.
That's okay. You know what? I'll help you out. I actually have the upcoming events mm-hmm. listed right here. You're going to, let's see, you guys were in Kansas, Missouri, today, and
Michigan.
And Michigan. Let's see. You guys mm-hmm. have Missouri again throughout the week, in Springfield and in Ozark. It'll be in Michigan again. Wisconsin, Heartland, Michigan, Monroe, Wisconsin, Byron Center, Michigan, Platte City, Missouri, Urbandale, Iowa, Muskegon, Michigan. Goodness. I'm only on October 3rd. And
right, there's a bunch.
There's a bunch of places going on. So everybody, check this out at facebook.com/fightback. Also check out americansforprosperity.org. Stephanie, thank you so much for being on and for AFP for doing this tour.
Well, sure. Well, hey, we couldn't do it without you guys, and I appreciate you guys inviting me on. This has been great.
Absolutely. We love, you know, AFP, you guys have been representing on this show lately. We had Seth Morgan from Ohio, and, oh, Susie, can you help
Patrick
me with
Warner from Missouri.
Exactly. And we also had on Tim Phillips not too long ago. So AFP is representing.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway. Well, thanks. We appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome. You're welcome. Well, thank you for your time, Stephanie. We appreciate it.
Sure. Glad to be on.
Well, I want to thank our guest tonight, Abdul Hakim Shabazz from IndiePolitics.org, as well as Stephanie Fontenot from Americans for Prosperity. Susie, well,
yes,
we had a good show tonight, didn't we?
We did.
It was pretty fun. I liked our guests.
Me too.
Well, you know what? We do it every week, but people need to know, where can they find you on the internet?
They can find me at SmoozyQ on Twitter and qwithaview.wordpress.com.
You can also find me at Josh Gillespie on the Twitters, as well as at joshgillespie.com, where you can find the complete archive of Gillespie. Coming up next, we have the Snark Factor with Fingers Malloy and the Snark Factor players for Smoozy Q. This is Josh Gillespie. Thanks for tuning in tonight, guys. We'll be back again next week. So
bye.
Long.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?